Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
It's been 10 days since George Floyd was brutally murdered.
How many times do we need to ask you to listen to your players?
What will it take
for one of us to be murdered by police brutality?
What if I was George Floyd?
If I was George Floyd?
What if I was George Floyd?
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 I am George Floyd.
I am Breonna Taylor.
I am Ahmaud Arbery.
I am Eric Garner.
I am McCormick Dunn.
I am Tamir Rice.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Walter Scott.
I am Michael Brown Jr.
I am Samuel Du Bois.
I am Frank Smart.
I'm Philip White.
I am Jordan Baker.
We will not be silenced.
We assert our rights
to peacefully protest.
It shouldn't take this long to admit.
So, on behalf of the National Football League,
this is what we, the players,
would like to hear you state.
We, the National Football League,
condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people.
We, the National Football League,
admit wrong and silencing our players from peacefully protesting.
We, the National Football League,
believe black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Well, that's a strong message from the best in the game. Their message, they will not be silenced. Hello, everybody. Welcome into NFL Live on this Friday. We've got quite the strong panel today with Dan Orlovsky, Mike Tannenbaum, Kimberly Martin here with us. I'm Diana Rossini with you for the next hour. So last night, we saw more than a dozen NFL stars release that powerful Black Lives Matter video. Today, athletes are out marching at 9:04 a.m. for the 9:04. The Jacksonville Jags march from TIA Bank Field to the sheriff's office in the wake of the death of George Floyd. The team sent out a tweet saying, "For many Americans, now is the movement. Never has that been clearer." So as we've seen a lot of the statements and comments and videos out there on social media, we're now seeing what seems to be sort of the next chapter to this, which is action. So, Kimberly, it's been 10 plus days of these powerful protests. What's different in the league now?
That video that we just watched is a difference maker. That video that we saw, it's a message. It is a warning to fans, to the league, that players are done being silent. They're going to use their platforms. They're not going to be told how to use it, and they will speak freely and demonstrate or protest in ways that they see fit. And that's something that did not happen several years ago. Players are fed up. They're done with lip service. As I wrote in a column for the Undefeated, lip service without from allies.
Kimberly, you're saying a lot of strong things here and good reporting. We're going to come back to you in a second here. But Dan, while we wait for Kim here, you know, we saw different approaches to pregame protests last season, the season before. Do you think this will be different this time around when football returns?
Oh, absolutely. Obviously, more voices as a part of this protest, and really a couple of reasons. One, these are the stars in the NFL in this video and the young stars. The average age of the guys in this video are 25 years old. I mean, this is the next 10, 12, 15 years of the NFL. It's their stars and it's their young faces. You know, I want to take everyone into the locker room, because when you see so many players like this speaking out as a player, when you sit next to those guys, I remember so many times having conversations with guys, and as you walk through the locker room or sit next to someone's locker, you often see guys have pictures of their families, their parents or their wives or their kids. And it is like this, it's this really almost intimate personal setting where, you know, these guys become way more than teammates. They become family. I mean, us as football players, we spend more time with those guys than we do anyone else, more than our own families. And so they become our families. And so when you're having these conversations with guys and they're sharing so many different things with you, and there's pictures of their kids right there or their wives right there, it creates this bond that is so special and so unique. And now we're watching all of these guys, these players, step out and publicly share the things that are on their heart, the pain that they have inside, and the cries. And when you have that, it's going to be this galvanizing, in a way, experience, I expect, where so many more teammates are going to sit there and go, not only am I willing, but I'm wanting to, because there's that bond and that relationship of all the time we've spent just sitting at our lockers together, having conversations, and it's only going to create more for the NFL players.
Which makes guys who don't understand the point of the mission, who don't understand why it started and why it continues, those teammates that don't get it, that's why it's so frustrating. When we have to spend time talking about, is Drew Brees apologetic? Is he sincere? Does he get it? That takes away from the actual message of the movement. And that is what bothers players so much.
Mike, listening yep. in to Kim and Dan here and their take, when you first saw this video and you saw how many of this league's superstars participated in this, what was your reaction to it?
Yeah, the most effective sort of leadership is player-led leadership. And I thought Dan made a great point. These are 25-year-old men. They are the future and the face of the NFL. And there's obviously been unspeakable tragedies in the recent weeks in our country. And what you hope is the opportunity that comes out of this moving forward is that the league and the Players Association bond together and develop programs that are sustainable. So after this news cycle goes, there's meaningful changes and meaningful programs in place. And we saw that today in Jacksonville, where the players and coaches work together. So I thought the video was excellent. I was really moved by it. And hopefully it's another example of when working together and it's player-led, authentic leadership, there could be meaningful programs that come out of some of these events of the last recent weeks.
Yeah, guys, we heard Kimberly mention Drew Brees and the situation with the New Orleans Saints and how they've been handling it. And we now know that Yahoo Finance interviewed Drew Brees, where he had said that he would never agree with anyone disrespecting the flag. And it really garnered quite a reaction from the NFL community, right? So we saw that Richard Sherman, he called him out saying he's beyond loss. And then even his teammate, Michael Thomas, said, we don't care if you don't agree, and whoever else, how about that? So that went out. Then Brees posted this apology yesterday to all this.
I know there's not much that I can say that would make things any better right now, but I just want you to see in my eyes how sorry I am for the comments that I made yesterday. I know that it hurt many people, especially friends, teammates, former teammates, loved ones, people that I care and respect deeply. That was never my intention. I wish I would have laid out what was on my heart in regards to the George Floyd murder, Ahmaud Arbery, the years and years of social injustice, police brutality, and the need for so much reform and change in regards to legislation and so many other things to bring equality to our Black communities. I am sorry, and I will do better. And I will be part of the solution. And I am your ally.
All right, so that was Drew Brees' video apology last night. This morning on First Take, our Maria Taylor had reaction to Brees' apology.
It wasn't a quote in a magazine. It wasn't a quote in a newspaper. And I'm exhausted and I'm tired of having to listen to someone say something like that and then have to sit back and be like, well, maybe he didn't. Maybe it's not his heart and it's this and it's that. When you reveal yourself to me and you say something like that and you say it out of an intolerant mind and or heart or a non-empathetic heart, and for the last 5 years, all we've done is see countless deaths in the street. My patience left my body when I watched George Floyd take his last breath. So if that didn't affect you and make you want to reassess the way that you're going to address a question that includes racial injustice in our country after you watch that man die in the middle of the street, something's off.
Now let's bring it back to our panel. So we know that the Saints met. Drew apologized to his team. His teammates accepted this apology. But Kimberly, come week one here, are players truly going to be able to move on from this?
Players will do whatever they are moved to do. How the reaction from fans, ownership, if players want to kneel, they will kneel. I wonder if Saints players kneel going forward. Is Drew Brees going to be asked about each week? Is he going to be he's now the centerpiece of this discussion when it's not about him. It's about George Floyd. That's the frustrating thing. We're talking about Drew Brees and his apology and his words, and it doesn't matter anymore, because whether he's apologetic or not, there are people who will not believe the authenticity of his apology. They just won't. And they'll look at him differently. There will be teammates that accept him and accept his apology, but they won't forget. There'll be players across the league that won't forget. But going forward, guys will do whatever they feel they need to do to raise awareness, and no one is going to stop them.
I think Kimberly brings up some great points. And I would say that, you know, a focal point for Drew is going to be how his words now become actions. And he's going to have to have like an urgency almost every single day to prove that apology is something that is sincere to him. It can't just be words. You know, oftentimes as players, because there's 17 weeks and there's 16 games, we get conditioned to go, okay, we lost on Sunday, and you hear this all the time. We're going to talk about this for 24 hours and we're going to move on. And we can condition ourselves to kind of think that way all the time. And that can't be the case here. Like, this is something that cannot just be moved on. It can't be a diet where you commit to it for a month and then all of a sudden you forget about it. This is going to be something that is going to have to be, and it should be, right? It should be something that is part of the conversation. There's got to be urgency to prove yourself, improve yourself, improve yourself, and to constantly listen. I've said that word. We've heard that word, listen, but it can't be of the past tense. It has to be of the present tense. We have to continuously keep listening. And that's going to be something that Drew's going to have to do for that locker room. He's going to have to do it for the NFL community as well.
And from an organization standpoint, all the teams are going to have to be very supportive. I called a community relations director earlier today from a team to get his sense of what they were thinking. It was interesting. One idea that's out there is maybe take the whole organization when it's an election day, not only to vote, but to help others vote who maybe can't get out there. And I think we're going to see a lot of manifestations of, again, the recent events where the protest could be around the anthem, but there are going to be a lot of other activities. And from, I think, what the organizations are going to look at is how can they help, how can they support all the members of the organization. So obviously there'll be a lot about the anthem, but I do think we'll see a lot of other programs that come out of this.
Well, good news here. Kimberly said a lot of good points here. And we also have a full column up over on theundefeated.com. You can go check it out. It's basically just the details of her perspective here on the Drew Brees situation. So make sure you go check that out. So, we've been talking about the words, but of course, there's action to all this. And Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan, he released this statement here. He said, "For far too long, I've reacted to social injustice with empathy and silent support, but I failed to follow through with active support. I feel the time has come to respond for all of us. To respond. So I see my city hurting, which is why I'm starting a fundraiser to help improve the community for people of color in the city of Atlanta. I'm kicking it off with a $500,000 donation, and I'm asking you to consider donating as well."
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with GEICO? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
All right, back here on NFL Live, Adam Schefter continues his countdown of top 10 questions of the offseason. So today, Schefty, what do you got at number two?
Question number two, will Dak get signed? This is a contract dance that both sides, Dallas and Dak, have engaged in for over a year now without resolution. And there's every reason to think now it will go on all the way up to this year's July 15th deadline, the last day the two sides finally can figure out an ever-elusive deal.
Fade left side of the end zone. Ah, a little throw! Touchdown! That throw was perfect! From Prescott.
Why they haven't come to an agreement is simple. Dallas wants Dak on a 5-year deal, while he wants a 4-year deal so he can hit the market again sooner and make even more than he's going to in his next contract. The 1-year difference has prevented the two sides from getting close to a deal. In fact, they rarely talk anymore. But they will be talking plenty in the middle of July, with both sides playing a game of beat the clock that will have enormous ramifications on the Cowboys and Prescott's future.
All right, Adam, coming in with some good details on the situation here. The two sides aren't really talking that much, but really what stood out here is the difference of 4 and 5 years. So, Mike Tannenbaum, is this really that big of a deal?
Absolutely. And Dallas is paying for a mistake, Diana, they made a year ago. A year ago, Zeke Elliott, with multiple years left on his contract, held out, and they reward that behavior and signed him and made him the highest paid running back. They also paid a good player in Lyle Collins, a good player in Jalen Smith, and they didn't address Dak Prescott, who's won 40 games, 26 years old, productive, high character. He checks every box, and he's your franchise quarterback. Get him signed. Everybody else can wait. Now, as it relates to 4 versus 5, the fifth year would be important for the team because you have cost certainty, and you want to lock in, obviously, your franchise quarterback. Todd France, a very good agent, he represents Dak Prescott. He wants another bite of the apple after the third year with only 1 year left to go. And that's why, for him, the shorter the deal, the better. Now, with that said, given the unusual situation of the pandemic and what could be a macroeconomic shift in terms of maybe the cap goes down, maybe the cap is flat, he may want to reevaluate that, because the longer the contract, Diana, the longer they could prorate a signing bonus. And that's going to be one of the keys here is, right now, Russell Wilson, about $35 million a year. Everyone expects Dak Prescott to go past there, but the guarantee money is going to be astronomical. Right now, it's about $107 million is the largest guarantee. Dak Prescott will go well past that, and a big component of that will be the signing bonus. So that fifth year would be important for proration to make that bonus higher. So I'm sure there's a deal to be made here, but all eyes are on that July 15th deadline, because as a franchise player, if he doesn't sign by then, he can only play on a one-year deal.
Mike, I completely understand the business side of all this, but Dan, what is the biggest hesitation for the Dallas Cowboys in signing him?
I think that the Cowboys like Dak Prescott at a certain number, whatever it is, dollars wise or years wise. And once that gets exceeded, they don't like him that much anymore. In the year that Dak had the best year of his career, which is last season, there's some question marks on the field. I mean, versus top 10 defenses, Dak has a QBR that's around average of the NFL. In those games when he's playing against top 10 defenses, in one possession games, he's got 3 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. So certainly, at best, average performance there. I say this all the time. Don't pay good players great players money, great player money. Or when you decide to pay a player, is he good enough to overcome not having the extra funds to pay the other guys? And I don't know if Dak has shown that. Again, in the best season of his career last year, 30 touchdowns, 19 of them are against bottom 10 defenses that led the NFL. So while I totally think that the Cowboys really like Dak, I don't know if there's enough evidence to go, no brainer, give him whatever he wants, no matter the amount of money or the years. There are some guys in the NFL that, you know, demand that or command that, and teams willingly do that. I don't believe that Dak has proven that. And so that's probably some of the hesitation for the Cowboys. I think it's a fair hesitation as well, no matter what anybody wants to say. And so it'd be really interesting to see. We're 39 days away from that deadline.
You know something? I'm not so sure this is about hesitation from the Cowboys, Dan. I think this is about the fact that Dak Prescott has all the leverage. Dak Prescott, and Mike laid it out for you, has so much more on his resume than other quarterbacks that have been paid at the top of the market. I'm not talking about near the top, literally at the top. There was a time when Jimmy Garoppolo, who hadn't even been with the 49ers for a full season, became the highest paid quarterback in football. If I'm Dak Prescott, the comparison that I am drawing with myself is Kirk Cousins. Not just because they're both fourth round picks, but guys who were willing to bet on themselves and have an incredible amount of mental toughness to ride it out I get it that Dak is making $31.5 million this year. That's more money than most of us will ever see in our entire lifetime. But still, there is long-term certainty on the table if Dak wants it. But what he's looking for is to wield all of the leverage that he has utilized up until this point and built up until this point. You're talking about a 26-year-old who has never missed a game, has helped this team stay very competitive, been incredibly successful on the field, and he still hasn't gotten a long-term deal. If I'm Dak and I've come this far, I'm not settling for anything other than the very best deal that I can get. And the reality is, if that is to wait one more year, well, the pot of gold on the other side of the rainbow could be a deal that smashes whatever the Cowboys have on the table right now. So if I'm Dak, I've got all the leverage and I'm continuing to play it for as long as I can.
I mean, I think you make a lot of great points, Field. I have said that, I mean, Dak is going to have a massive season. That's as talented a football team offensively as there is in the NFL. So to the Kirk Cousins point, if I was Dak Prescott and the Cowboys did not give me what I wanted right now, I'd be totally comfortable playing on the franchise tag because I know I'm going to have a good season and obviously health comes into play. But I don't know if you're sitting there going, like, how do you dispute some of the things that happened last year? Like, what would be, if I'm the Cowboys and I go, listen, Dak, we really like you, but 9 times last year in the fourth quarter, we had a chance to go win the football game with you as our quarterback. We didn't accomplish that once. Out of 9 times in the fourth quarter, late in that quarter, you had a chance to go win the football game for us, and it never happened. Again, I don't need you to play great against bad defenses. That's awesome, but I need you to play at your best when we have to play the best. And that didn't happen last year. And everybody know, I understand the career and the body of the work, and that matters. But we also know that the NFL is especially for a person who's in a contract year, is a year-to-year league. It's a week-to-week league. And when he comes off of his no doubt best season, but there's some caveats to it when you look at the tape and then the numbers, I don't know if you can sit there and go, I've got all the leverage. You're going to give me the number that I want and the years that I want, because the Cowboys can sit there and go, there's some stuff here that we've got some hesitation with.
Yeah, I mean, just to quickly come back here, Dan, is that Kirk Cousins came off a far less impressive season than Dak Prescott's last year and got the largest contract in terms of full guarantee ever in the history of the NFL. It is not about just the raw numbers. It is about the leverage here. If I'm Dak Prescott, patience is my friend. He's going to get paid in a major way.
Yeah, there's something very fundamental here that, Dan, I just want to point out. It's supply and demand. If they were worried about overpaying Dak Prescott, why not just put the transition tag on Dak instead of the franchise tag? Let the market set whatever the number is, and then they can either match or not match. What do you think the Jacksonville Jaguars would pay for Dak Prescott? So he may not be perfect. I understand that. But if he would walk out the door, right, and to Field's point, let's say in a year and a half, where does Dallas go from that? And the cost of replacing him could be even more expensive than the person you drafted is in the building.
And I think the caveat that the Dallas Cowboys will forever sit on is the fact that he has yet to win them a Super Bowl. We've been hearing that over the last few months as these two sides, as according to Adam Schefter, have rarely spoken. But we know those communications will heat up as we get closer to that deadline in mid-July.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Some good news today around the NFL. Some coaches returned to their facilities. You see Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin among them. Tomlin's mask, by the way, you can see it there. That was actually made by his wife, Kia. She started making them during this pandemic. She's actually a clothing designer and had to stop working, but she got to work on those masks. Looks good there. So what do we know here in terms of the league? So the league has set forth parameters for the next step of their reopening plan. So teams must first obtain permission from local and state governments to open their buildings, which for the 49ers, unfortunately, that means they're actually going to be the only team who can't open up just yet. And speaking of the 49ers, the number one thing on Kyle Shanahan's docket at this point, take a listen.
How the heck are there only four black coaches out of 32 head coaches? How are there only two GMs? I mean, we're in a predominantly, I mean, the majority of our players are black. So the fact that there's that few, I mean, that's not debatable. Like, I don't know if people are openly thinking they're doing it, which I think that people sort to that, but that's what the problem is. I mean, that number is not debatable. And that is an issue. I only speak for myself. I try to hire people that I work with that are prepared for it. And fortunately, that's worked out well for me. We got a Muslim coach. We got a Muslim coordinator. We got a black coordinator. We have a lesbian on our staff. We have everything. And it's not just to show people that we're trying to be diverse. It's just because I've been around these people and they are really good at what they do. And we can't win without these people. And that's just how it works out. I don't know why the numbers aren't like that, but the numbers are wrong. And that's stuff that, hell yeah, we want to fix.
Obviously, just a really strong statement there from Kyle Shanahan. And Kimberly, I feel like we've heard so many head coaches, Bill O'Brien, Mike Vrabel, all really strong on this topic. So what is the head coach's role in actually fixing the lack of diversity on their actual staff?
Literally what you heard Kyle Shanahan say. He laid it out very specifically. These are the issues that we're dealing with. These are the issues that are plaguing the NFL. The NFL has to look at itself. All of these, the power hierarchy that exists, coaches, GMs, personnel guys, everybody has to look around and say, you know what? We're complicit. When we make hires, we're complicit. And Kyle Shanahan being able to gender so freely and fluidly, I want to commend him, but really, that's how we should be talking about it. We shouldn't be commending him for saying something that's very obvious. And those comments on the heels of Vic Fangio's comments tells you why there's a disconnect in the NFL.
So we hear all the time that, you know, there's not enough hiring of coordinators and staff under these head coaches. So, Dan, I just want to ask you, what do you think coaches can begin to do to sort of have some power here in changing how we go about the hiring process?
Got to start with themselves. You know, they've got to be willing to ask themselves really difficult conversations, because one of the things that we've heard over the last 7 to 10 days is, well, we need to change, right? Well, just because you're an NFL coach doesn't mean you're immune to that. And so you've got to be willing to sit there and ask yourself, am I doing things the right way? Am I hiring the right way? Am I seeing things the right way? Am I thinking the right way? Am I using the right words? And you've got to be willing to sit there and go, you know what? I wasn't. I was wrong. I did this poorly, and I'm sorry. I think that every coach and front office person, for that matter, should go watch Chris Ballard of the Colts and what he said yesterday in his sit down, and just be willing to admit, I was wrong about this, and I did the bad job with this, and I'm embarrassed. And they need to have those really difficult and uncomfortable conversations with themselves first. We all do. And then when it gets in front of their football team, they need to allow the football team to have those conversations as well, to give people the platform to have those conversations, and then really start to fix some of the wrongs that they, whether subconsciously or consciously, potentially have been a part of. And so, but it's got to start with each individual asking and being willing to asking the difficult conversation or the question, and then being willing to say the uncomfortable answer. Be willing to say, I was wrong. I stunk at this. I'm sorry about it. And then take the steps to fix it. But it's got to start with each individual person.
And when I look at the hiring cycle, I look at this issue into a short-term and long-term. Short-term, I think there's a few really credible minority candidates. Raheem Morris, Eric Bieniemy. You look at Tampa Bay, Byron Leftwich, Todd Bowles. There are a number of highly qualified minority candidates. So when we get to January, hopefully we're talking about more than one of them getting hired. But we really got to take the Band-Aid off. And really where we have to address this issue is at the hiring at the entry level, where racial and gender diversity needs to improve dramatically, be it internships, entry level. So 2 to 4 years from now, they're going to naturally work their way up the pipeline. And I think that's where Kyle Shanahan was referring to with some of the people that are on his staff, that as they grow and ascend and get more responsibilities, that's going to add to the number of qualified candidates.
Yeah. All right. So, guys, the Minnesota Vikings, they actually canceled all their virtual team meetings yesterday, and they ended the actual business day at noon to allow their players, their coaches, their staff, giving them the opportunity to view a local memorial service for George Floyd. Now, several Vikings players attended the service, which was held at North Central University in downtown Minneapolis. Here's Eric Kendrick's reaction to it.
Minneapolis is a place that, you know, I care about really deeply. It breaks my heart to see the people of Minneapolis, you know, not only treated like this, but, you know, how hurt they are by this, you know what I mean? People of the world, you know, people. This isn't a problem that's going to be fixed overnight, you know, It's gonna take accountability from each of us.
Emotional stuff there. We'll be right back. Well, we made it. We're counting down the top 10 biggest questions headed into the season. So our Adam Schefter has our number one answer. Adam, what do we got?
Question number one. How will COVID-19 impact the season? It's already impacted the offseason, and it most certainly will impact the regular season whenever and however it begins. No one knows if the season will start on time, but everyone is certain it will end in Tampa, site of Super Bowl 55. Super Bowl 55 is the secret sauce that gives this season and the NFL the flexibility it needs. It can be played February 7th, as it currently is slated to be, or it can be pushed back into March or even April. The league will have options. But for now, everyone waits to see when coaches and players will be allowed to go back to work, when training camp will begin, and whether fans can attend games. But football provided sports fans a diversion this offseason. It intends to do that and more this season, whenever it begins.
All right, Kimberly Martin joins us here. Kimberly, you got some exclusive access to how one quarterback is handling this virtual offseason. Let's take a look.
Gosh, it's delayed.
Chad, can you hear me?
You got to be kidding me.
What's the most awkward thing about having to work out this way?
Well, as you can imagine, there's always challenges with technology, so the Wi-Fi may cut in and out. I have very poor Wi-Fi connection. Can I leave the meeting and just come back in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We're pretty close to the road, and I'll have a few different people who yell, "Go Pack, go," if we get the occasional heckler. Being out in the driveway on display for the whole neighborhood to see is probably less than ideal, but desperate times call for desperate measures.
So, Kimberly, we saw you there talking with Kirk Cousins. For you, what is the biggest challenge that he shared with you about just this really strange offseason?
I am Kirk Cousins in this moment with these audio issues. I know 100% what he's dealing with. This is the problem. Thank you, COVID. That's it. We have to adjust. These players have to adjust. Luckily for Kirk, Wi-Fi issues don't set him back tremendously. He's an NFL veteran. He knows what he's doing. The real question are the rookies, the young guys, the people who are new to teams, who don't have any sort of knowledge or any sort of understanding of how their organization runs in person. You know, I spoke to Golden Tate for the story I did in addition to Kirk Cousins, and he mentioned feeling really bad for the rookies because while guys are trying to get, are in the fire, trying to get ready for a season, they're going to be adjusting to, what are we doing here? How do we do this? And even his new teammate, Blake Martinez, new guy, veteran. But again, he's on these virtual meetings, having never met anybody face-to-face from the Giants organization. Can you imagine joining a team where you haven't met anyone face-to-face and everything is virtual? Well, guess what? I know what that's like. And let me tell you, it is not easy. Okay. It is not easy.
I was thinking that as you were saying it, you're not a rookie at this business. You've been doing this for years, but you're a rookie here at ESPN. We don't even know you. We need to get you in studio.
Yes.
So thank you so much for that access.
In a pandemic.
Yes. All right. Thanks so much.